Welcome to the second chapter of this book, Space and Time. Our present ideas about the motion of bodies date back to Galileo and Newton. Before them, people believed Aristotle, who said that the natural state of a body was to be at rest and that it moved only if driven by a force or impulse. It followed that a heavy body should fall faster than a light one, because it would have greater pull toward the earth. The Aristotelian tradition also held that one could work out all the laws that govern the universe by pure thought. It was not necessary to check by observation. So no one until Galileo bothered to see whether bodies of different weight did in fact fall at different speeds. It is said that Galileo demonstrated that Aristotle's belief was false by dropping weights from the Leaning Tower of Pisa. The story is almost certainly untrue, but Galileo did do something equivalent. He rolled balls of different weights down a smooth slope. The situation is similar to that of heavy bodies falling vertically, but it is easier to observe because the speeds are smaller. Galileo's measurements indicated that each body increased its speed at the same rate, no matter what its weight. For example, if you let go of a ball on a slope that drops by 1 meter every 10 meters you go along, the ball will be traveling down the slope at a speed of about 1 meter per second after 1 second, 2 meters per second after 2 seconds, and so on, however heavy the ball. Of course, a lead weight would fall faster than a feather, but that's only because a feather is slowed down by air resistance. If one drops two bodies that don't have much air resistance, such as two different lead weights, they fall at the same rate. On the moon, where there is no air to slow things down, the astronaut David R. Scott performed the feather and lead weight experiment and found that indeed they did hit the ground at the same time. Galileo's measurements were used by Newton as the basis of his laws of motion. In Galileo's experiments, as a body rolled down the slope, it was always acted on by the same force, its weight, and the effect was to make it constantly speed up. They showed that the real effect of a force is always to change the speed of a body rather than just to set it moving, as was previously thought. It also meant that whenever a body is not acted on by any force, it will keep on moving in a straight line at the same speed. This idea was first stated explicitly in Newton's Principia Mathematica, published in 1687, and is known as Newton's first law. What happens to a body when a force does act on it is given by Newton's second law. This states that the body will accelerate or change its speed at a rate that is proportional to the force. For example, the acceleration is twice as great if the force is twice as great. The acceleration is also smaller the greater the mass or quantity of matter of the body. The same force acting on a body of twice the mass will produce half the acceleration. A familiar example is provided by a car. The more powerful the engine, the greater the acceleration. But the heavier the car, the smaller the acceleration for the same engine. In addition to his laws of motion, Newton discovered a law to describe the force of gravity, which states that every body attracts every other body with a force that is proportional to the mass of each body. The force between two bodies would be twice as strong if one of the bodies, say body A, had its mass doubled. This is what you might expect because one could think of the new body A as being made up two bodies with the original mass. Each would attract body B with the original force. Thus the total force between A and B would be twice the original force. And if, say, one of the bodies had twice the mass and the other had three times the mass, then the force would be six times as strong. One can now see why all bodies fall at the same rate. A body up twice the weight will have twice the force of gravity pulling it down, but it will also have twice the mass. According to Newton's second law, these two effects will exactly cancel each other, so the acceleration will be the same in all cases. Newton's law of gravity also tells us that the farther apart the bodies, the smaller the force. Newton's law of gravity says that the gravitational attraction of a star is exactly one quarter that of a similar star at half the distance. This law predicts the orbits of the Earth, the Moon, and the planets with great accuracy. If the law were that the gravitational attraction of a star went down faster or increased more rapidly with distance, the orbits of the planets would not be elliptical. They would either spiral into the Sun or escape from the Sun. The big difference between the ideas of Aristotle and those of Galileo and Newton is that Aristotle believed in a preferred state of rest, which anybody would take up if it were not driven by some force or impulse. In particular, he thought that the earth was at rest. But it follows from Newton's laws that there is no unique standard of rest. One could equally well say that body A was at rest and body B was moving at constant speed with respect to body A, or that body B was at rest and body A was moving. For example, if one sets aside for a moment the rotation of the Earth and its orbit around the Sun, one could say that the Earth was at rest and that the train on it was traveling north at 90 miles per hour, or that the train was at rest and the Earth was moving south at 90 miles per hour. If one carried out experiments with moving bodies on the train, all Newton's laws would still hold. For instance, playing ping pong on the train, one would find that the ball obeyed Newton's laws just like a ball on a table by the track. So there is no way to tell whether it is the train or the earth that's moving. The lack of an absolute standard of rest meant that one could not determine whether two events that took place at different times occurred in the same position in space. For example, suppose our ping pong ball on the train bounces straight up and down, hitting the table twice on the same spot, 1 second apart. To someone on the track, the two bounces would seem to take place about 40 meters apart, because the train would have traveled that far down the track between the bounces. The non-existence of absolute rest, therefore, meant that one could not give an event an absolute position in space as Aristotle had believed it. The positions of events and the distances between them would be different for a person on the train and on the track, and there would be no reason to prefer one's position to the other's. Newton was very worried by this lack of absolute position or absolute space, as it was called, because it did not accord with his idea of an absolute God. In fact, he refused to accept lack of absolute space, even though it was implied by his laws. He was severely criticized for this irrational belief by many people, most notably by Bishop Berkeley, a philosopher who believed that all material objects in space and time are an illusion. When the famous Dr. Johnson was told of Berkeley's opinion, he cried, "I refute it thus," and stubbed his toe on a large stone. Both Aristotle and Newton believed in absolute time. That is, they believed that one could unambiguously measure the interval of time between two events, and that this time would be the same whosoever measured it, provided they used a good clock. Time was completely separate from and independent of space. This is what most people would take to be the common sense view. However, we have had to change our ideas about space and time. Although our apparently common sense notions work well when dealing with things like apples or planes that travel comparatively slowly, they don't work at all for things moving at or near the speed of light. With this, we conclude this episode.